This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
Director James Comey fired by Donald J. Trump just the other day. Yesterday we gave you the story, today we give you the reaction. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. Glad to be with each and every one of you this morning on a Thursday. Happy to be with you. I'm Caleb Cockwit, as always, and did want to bring this to your attention because, essentially, sometimes my predictions work out, sometimes they don't. I like to think, at least a pretty decent track record. On this, I was 100% accurate, because guess what? We have switched teams again. With everything that has happened with James Comey and the media fallout, as it were, not just from politicians but political pundits, everybody that was on the Democrat side is now saying that this is Watergate, this is akin to Nixonism, and this is like the Saturday Night Massacre. So they're saying that with Donald Trump nixing James Comey, that it's the same as when Richard Nixon was seeking to get rid of people that were investigating him. They're saying it's a one-to-one comparison. It's the same thing. Donald Trump is Nixon. First of all, I try to stay away from, even though I use a lot of history in my show, and those of you who have listened frequently know that, I try to stay away from giving one-to-one comparisons between historical figures. I typically try to say that this aspect of this historic figure is similar to this aspect of the person we're talking about in the news today. But it's always dangerous when you say so-and-so is so-and-so, and that's why you hear a lot in political debates, so-and-so is Hitler. Well, so-and-so isn't Hitler. Hitler is Hitler. Now, they may have some similar, you know, ideas, maybe even some similar practices, but that doesn't make them the same person. And so the Democrats saying that this is akin to Watergate, akin to the Saturday Night Massacre, and that Donald Trump is Nixon, they're doing that to get a rise out of people. Now, there may be some scandal here. Like I said yesterday, I am suspicious of everything that was happening with the firing. I think it's suspect as well. But at the same time, let's just take a second, take a deep breath, issue a measured response. If you want a perfect example of what's going on in the media and that we have switched teams yet again, I think the perfect example is Stephen Colbert, who the other day, this is not last night's show, it's the one before, but I saw the clip yesterday. Stephen Colbert, host of The Late Show, goes on, news breaks, just 10, 15 minutes before he goes on, because keep in mind the show is recorded, they actually recorded in the afternoon, and then they air it late at night. So Stephen Colbert goes in, and he just received news that James Comey has been fired. So what he does is he goes out on stage, he says to his audience, "This is breaking. James Comey has just been fired as the FBI director." The crowd goes crazy. Raucous applause. And everybody's thrilled. They're happy. They're cheering on the fact that James Comey has now been fired. However, that being said, that's not what Stephen Colbert was looking for. That's not what he was expecting. You see, his audience had not yet gone through the mental gymnastics of, no, now that Trump has fired Comey, we have to love Comey and hate Trump, because that's what we're supposed to be doing here. And so Colbert reacts kind of surprised and goes, "Huh, I guess there's a lot of Trump fans here." Because I guess he didn't want to insult his audience there while they were recording. But see, they've not been told by somebody significant, somebody that they respect, that they're supposed to like James Comey and not like Trump now, because they've been trained to hate Comey. Keep in mind that just last week, maybe late the week before, but definitely within the past 10 days at least, Hillary Clinton said in an interview that James Comey is the reason, one of the reasons, that she lost the election. Therefore, they all believe they're supposed to hate Comey, they're supposed to be excited about his firing, and then they erupt into applause, and Colbert has to come and correct them. He's like, whoa, no. We're supposed to – remember, we hate Trump. We hate everything Trump does. So we're supposed to be mad that James Comey is getting fired because they haven't gone through those mental gymnastics yet. They're sheep. They're not thinking for themselves. They're not making their own decisions. And unfortunately, that's a large section of the American populace. Now, I know I'm preaching to the choir here. Typically, if you do listen to talk radio, at least I hope so, one of the reasons that you're doing that is because it challenges your thinking. It challenges your ideas. You people statistically are supposed to be the ones who tend to be the most informed, that actually spend their spare time, whether it's driving in the car or whatever it is, listening to news, analyzing it, thinking about it. That's why you listen to talk radio. So I realize I'm preaching to the choir here, but this goes to show that the vast majority of the American population, they're sheep. They have to wait for somebody who is powerful, somebody who's influential, somebody that they respect to tell them what they're supposed to think about a news story. And I say this also as a cautionary measure. Please don't anybody ever do that to me. You know, I'm glad that there are people out there that respect my opinion, that are concerned with it. They want to hear what they have to say. That's the reason I'm on the air in the first place. But at the same time, please don't let me tell you what to think. Now, if I tell you how to think, if I give you new information that you didn't have, if I present an argument and that persuades your thinking, that's one thing. But please don't, if Caleb says it, that must be the way that it is. Please don't ever do that to me. And based on some of the calls we got yesterday, that's how my audience is. They are doing their own thinking. They disagreed with me on some things, and that's okay. All I'm saying is, don't be like the sheeple in Stephen Colbert's audience that has to be trained how they're supposed to think one way or the other about a news story when it breaks. Do your own thinking, do your own homework, and don't fall prey to that. See, the problem with this is the vast majority of the American population has no anchor to truth and no anchor to their own beliefs. They go wherever the wind leads them, wherever people that they trust, people that they like, tell them that they're supposed to be politically, and they don't really form their own ideas. They pick a handful of people that they like, that they want to listen to. They're like, yeah, this guy's pretty close to me, so whatever he thinks on it, that's the way I'm going to go. Please don't ever do that. It's lazy, it's intellectually dishonest, and it robs you of having your own opinions, which in my opinion, there we go again, which in my opinion is the greatest part of living in a free republic, is that we're allowed to have our own opinions, we're allowed to disagree. So please don't ever do that. Change your ideas, change the way you think about a story based on your beliefs, your principles, and because somebody appealed to your sense of reason, not because you trust the person blindly. And that's the point that I want to drive home. All right, we've got a guest coming into the studio here in just a second, so we're going to get to that. We've got your calls. Hopefully we'll be able to get to them. Got a very full show today. We'll try to do that when we come back. 860-1440 are the numbers.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The Bible is a book worth more than all the other books that were ever printed. Patrick Henry.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers, and it looks like our guest isn't in studio yet, so what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and jump straight to the phones. Let's go to Mark on line one. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning, Caleb. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing quite well. What's on your mind, my friend?
Fantastic. Yeah, I just want to kind of add to what you were saying a while ago, talking about this whole Comey situation. You got to look at it from the onset. Look at it for what it's worth. Remember this. Remember, the day with the night Donald Trump won the election, the very next day, the Congressional Black Caucus, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, the Democrats made a commitment. They said, we are not going to work with Donald Trump. And I'll even go a little bit further.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and even some of the Democrats were talking about impeachment a couple of days after he was inaugurated.
Oh, no. Dianne Feinstein was talking about it before his inauguration, right after the election. So you had people, he's not even president yet, and they're talking about impeachment proceedings.
Exactly. So, I mean, I try to look at this and put it in the proper context. This has nothing to do with James Comey. It's got everything to do with delegitimizing Donald Trump's presidency and finding any way they can to minimalize his presidency and get him impeached. That is what this is all about, because listen, they had 8 years of Obama. They figured Hillary was going to win, and they was going to get to push that progressive agenda all the way to a, say, single-payer health care system, which that's what we'd be talking about right now if Hillary Clinton was president. We'd be talking single-payer. But they didn't get that, and they were devastated, and they're very angry, and they're trying to destroy Donald Trump because they don't like him, and they don't want him to be president. That's it in a nutshell. That's what I believe anyway.
Well, I thank you so much for your comments, Mark, and here's the thing. I think you're 100% accurate on that, and keep in mind, I am not a Donald Trump supporter. I didn't vote for the man. I didn't support him. I didn't campaign for him. In fact, I spoke out pretty strongly against him all throughout the campaign. But you're right. They're being completely unfair. They have made it their mission in life to stall Donald Trump at every stop. And I said yesterday, Chuck Schumer coming out talking about how crooked it is to fire James Comey. Same thing with Elizabeth Warren and several other big Democrat senators. And I'm sitting there thinking, you were calling for the man's job last week. I genuinely think anything bad that ever happens in this country, they would blame Donald. They would want a full investigation launched into how Donald Trump caused it. They lose a sock in the dryer. They want to find out how Donald Trump caused that. And so that's why it's hard to take them seriously. Because here's the thing. There are legitimate reasons to be suspicious about the timing of the firing of James Comey. I'm suspicious of it. But at the same time, it's hard to take them seriously when you know that background. It's hard to take them seriously when you know it is their political mission in life to stop Donald Trump at every single turn.
But, and I think I mentioned this yesterday or the day before, and okay, we're going to disagree, but I just plainly don't see them doing something that the other side hasn't also done.
I agree with you on that. And I'm it's good that you bring that up, Joe. I appreciate you transitioning me into that, because the very next thing on my notes, which I know it's dark in here, but you could probably see it.
Oh, I can see anything from a distance up close.
Oh, okay, I see. So you're farsighted. So the very next thing on my notes was Kellyanne Conway. Because Kellyanne Conway did the media rounds the other day talking about the firing of James Comey, talking about how James Comey's bad, he's incompetent, he needed to be thrown out of his job. And what's funny is the thing that she met with these different political pundits, whether she was debating another politician or she was speaking directly to the reporters or the anchors running the desk, she would say one thing about James Comey, how he's unfit for the position that he was in. And then the Democrats would say, well, but Donald Trump also said this about him in the campaign, or said this about him shortly after inauguration, or said this about him not long after he was installed into the presidency. And, I mean, these are things that are just a few months old, and she looks at them like a horn's growing out of their head. It is not unfair to talk about something that someone said in November and compare that to what they're doing right now. That is a completely legitimate criticism. And so while I agree with what Mark was saying about it is hard to take these Democrats seriously because you know they're trying to stop Donald Trump at every turn and that is their goal in life. At the same time, there's people on the Donald Trump side that are doing exactly the same thing.
And all through the 8 years of Obama, there were Republicans who were in lockstep trying to derail anything that Obama wanted to propose or any program that he endorsed. They were anti-Obama. And I'm not, but with me, and I'm being very honest, it's done. Trump's president and all of this other stuff, to me, is getting in the way of his really running the country like it should. Too much attention being diverted. Maybe some of it's not nonsense, but too much attention being diverted away from what he was elected to do, and that's be president of the United States, first and foremost.
Yeah, now, right. It's important. It's important to bring this up, though, with everything that was going on with Kellyanne Conway. And I don't hate Kellyanne Conway. I don't think that she's the villain that a lot of people have made her out to be. I think she's a very skilled spin doctor. And she's doing, I mean, you have to keep in mind, when it comes to, and I'm not trying to do this wholesale or paint with a broad brush, but Kellyanne Conway, because she does get to choose her clients, I'm not saying that she's, you know, some prisoner or something like that, but her job is to make Donald Trump look good. And so when she goes out, it's just funny to me that she'll look at these political pundits that are talking about things that Donald Trump said as recently as just a few months ago, and they bring up a quote that Donald Trump himself said, you know, in 2016, not, you know, during the Crusades. This didn't happen 600 years ago. This is this is recent news. And so it's not like this happened hundreds of years ago. This happened a few months ago. So, and I want you to, because I know that a lot of people in my audience are Republicans, whether they're in a lot of cases, you were either a Trump supporter early on, because I know this state went really hard for Trump, or you were like me, a very reluctant Trump supporter. Well, actually, I wasn't a Trump supporter at any given time, but you supported him after he became president. In other words, you didn't like that he was president, but you wanted him to succeed. And so you did what I think we should do with every president, Democrat or Republican, which is once they're president, try to give them the benefit of the doubt, want them to succeed. Now, you know, in Obama's case, he spoiled that very quickly for me. And in Trump's case, it's been a mixed bag. But nonetheless, when that happens, do you remember how it felt when we were going back with President Obama, for example, and Obama would say one thing, and we'd say, wait, just a few months ago, Obama was saying the complete opposite of what he's saying now, and then the claim was, well, he evolved. Well, that's the claim that they're essentially doing with Donald Trump on James Comey. They're saying that, well, Donald Trump, yes, he did say these things, and he was praising James Comey, but now he evolved. Now he's changed. Now he's turned over a new leaf. Maybe he has. But it's still completely legitimate to be suspicious of that. Because any politician, regardless of whether it's Donald Trump or somebody on the left or whoever it is, you don't just accept what anyone's saying at face value.
That's what you're about. You're right.
And so we've got to look deeper into this. Now, I think that it is possible that Kellyanne Conway could have gone on all these shows and made a solid case for all of this. Solid case for him changing, solid case for why he started looking at it in a different light, saying, look, now he's the president, he's learned some things that he didn't know on the trail, but the way she would have had to have done that is essentially say, but let's be honest, Donald Trump didn't know very much about politics. Donald Trump wasn't exactly on the ball during the campaign, and he's still a political novice, and so he's still kind of trying to figure things out and figure out the way he said what he needed to say to get elected, but now he's learning a lot more about the process. But here's the thing. I think that would get her fired. And the reason I think that would get her fired is because Donald Trump always wants to look like he's always been the smartest person in every room he's ever been in, and I don't think his ego would allow somebody that close to him, Kellyanne Conway, to say that and still retain her employment with him. So I think that his ego is getting in the way of what would be very helpful to him. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 8:31 and 32. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Welcome back, everybody. Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. We do have some callers on, but we're going to hold off on that for the time being because we do have a guest in studio. We have Scott, the general manager of the Biscuits, in studio with us right now. Pull him up, Joe.
Good morning.
Yeah, good to see you.
Hey.
All right, so we know that there's always a lot going on with the Biscuits around this time of year. We're really getting into the heat of the first half of the season, so give us an update. What's going on down there?
Got a lot going on. Team's playing well. Again, despite not having a ton of top prospects, we're still over 500. We got 17-15 record, so fighting for first place, trying to get that first half division championship locked up so we can kind of focus on the second half and make the playoffs without having to worry about too much in the late part of the season. But a lot of fun stuff going on tonight. We got our Mardi Gras night. So we did a crawfish boil last night. We got a Mardi Gras night tonight. So we're just going all Cajun Creole this week. So the crawfish boil went great. Tonight we've got the Millbrook Revelers. They're a great Mardi Gras group out. We're going to have a whole bunch of different decorations, music, jazz, live music before and after the game by the Lo-Fi Loungers. Some great drink specials, some great food food specials. So should be a really fun night, a high-energy game.
Yeah, everybody head out there and wear some beads.
Yeah, so. Well, and if you don't, we've got some for you.
Well, there you go. See, they've got all the bases covered. Yes, pun intended.
Yes.
So that being said, with everything that's going on with the Biscuits, I know y'all have a lot of promos. It's a lot of fun. I wanted to talk about the baseball itself for just a second. It seems like with everything that's been going, because people who may not be as avid baseball fans as you and myself may not realize how lucky we are to have had a really good team last year and continue to have a really good team this year, because usually in minor league, you're really good one year, you lose all your good prospects the next year, and you suck next year. But we did really well last year, we're doing really well this year.
Yeah, it's funny. We follow Durham, which is our AAA affiliate, and their entire roster, top to bottom, was basically our team last year. And they have the best record in all of minor league baseball. They have the best ERA in all of them. I mean, their stats are just unbelievable. And we're like, yeah, that was us last year. But again, we still have a winning record this year. Again, we don't have a top-rated prospect, but it's a team effort this year. We've got great defense. Our starting pitching has been phenomenal. And really, I credit most of it to Brady Williams, our manager. He really gets these guys to want to play, to want to go out there. Even if they've got a little nagging injury, whatever it may be, they want to go out and play for him. He does a great job of motivating them. He's a younger guy, so they feel connected to him. And again, he genuinely cares about them and their progression. I get to go down to the clubhouse and chat with him and chat with the players every now and then. And you can just see the fire in their eyes when he gets done talking with them, that they want to go out there and they want to play and they want to be their best.
And that's always great to see. And I think that's one of the most instrumental skills you have as a manager, because any leadership position, the goal should always be to get the most out of the people who you're having an influence over. And it seems like our manager really does that, and I appreciate him being there. I appreciate what he does, because it leads to a really good team. Now, we do have Cade Gotta back. Am I correct? He came back from
correct.
Durham?
Yep.
Yeah, so he's been doing really well with the Biscuits, has a really good batting average. I mean, he's been getting it done.
Yeah, we started off the season with a lot of talent that, after about six games, we lost three players to Durham, and now all of a sudden they're starting to slowly come back. They were filling in some injury holes, but Kay Gatta, Grandon Getzman, Braxton Lee, Nathan Lucas. I mean, we've got six guys hitting over 300 this year.
I got to ask that about – what are you feeding Braxton Lee? Because the difference in Braxton Lee last year and this year, I mean, he's tearing the cover off.
He went from a 180 hitter who was great in the field to a 320 hitter who was great in the field and hit his first two career home runs this season.
You know, that was his first career home run in professional ball, and of course his second, but he played at Ole Miss for 4 years and never hit a home run.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. Again,
that's right.
The guys like Lee and Getzman and Gatta, I mean, we saw them last year, and they came back on opening day, and we're just like, these are different guys. Like, Grandon Getzman put on 30 pounds of muscle. Cade Gatta just bulked up. Braxton Lee didn't put on a lot of muscle, but his swing is just so much more refined. They had a great spring training down in Tampa, is all I can say. And a lot of the younger guys progressed at a high rate because they knew they had opportunities. Durham, again, is completely stacked. There's a lot of injuries at the major league level. So we're seeing guys like Jose Alvarado get called up directly to the majors from Montgomery, which hasn't happened since 2005. So a lot of injuries means a lot of opportunities for guys lower in the system. So they're making the best of it.
Well, now, everything we've been talking about thus far, I mean, it's stuff that I love because I'm a baseball fanatic. But what I love about the Biscuits and their organization is if you are a baseball fanatic like me, you can go down there, you can see really high-quality ball. I mean, so far, and we were actually talking about this in the hall before we got into before the show started, actually. Unfortunately, the games have been really exciting lately. I mean, we'd like to put them away 10 runs to nothing with a shutout, but that hasn't been happening. So the best part about that is you have seen really exciting baseball, and it's great to see that. But at the same time, you know, what I love about the Biscuits is you don't have to be a baseball fanatic to have a great time at Riverwalk Stadium. You've got all the things that you were talking about going on right now. The Mardi Gras tonight, you had the crawfish boil last night, you guys have fireworks. Is it every Friday and Saturday?
Most Fridays and every Saturday. But again, tomorrow we've got our family faith night as well. So again, it's a completely different atmosphere from what you're going to see tonight. I mean, it's much more faith-based, family base. We've got a pregame concert by Jasmine Murray, who's an American Idol finalist. She's a former Miss Mississippi. Amazing talent. She has a beautiful voice. So she's going to be doing a concert from 5:45 to 6:30. So if you're coming tomorrow, get there early. Your ticket price includes the concert. Your ticket price includes the Max fireworks. So for basically $11, you're getting a concert, you're getting a baseball game, you're getting a fireworks show. I mean, you can't beat that.
And how cool is that? A concert before the game instead of after the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And tonight we have a concert after the game, just so you know.
Well, there's no shortage of things to do.
Live music. That's what we're doing.
I'm going to be there tonight. Well, I'll be there, and I will stay unless it goes 13 innings again. I think I have to get out early.
Scott, I just think that we're so fortunate in the city of Montgomery to have a great organization like the Biscuits that not only provides good quality baseball for the sports fans, but you know, if you've got kids, if maybe your significant other or your wife is not super into baseball like you are, they can come down there, they can have a great time. You could have an entire family that's not really sports fans that can come down and have a great time, and it's a great entertainment value.
Yeah, more than 50% of the people who come to our games don't know what the final score is when they leave our games. And that's an honest stat. That's something we've actually pulled, and that's how we want it. Because, again, we don't get to control the players on the field. We don't get to control the trades that the Tampa Bay Rays make. All we can control is the entertainment that we provide. So hopefully the baseball team is good too, but hopefully that's not the primary reason you're coming out.
Well,
we want you to come out and support the team, but at the same time, we got a lot more going on.
Absolutely, and we do want you to go to the stadium. We want you to support the Biscuits because we want to keep them here as long as possible. I love this venue. I love the work that they're doing down there. But at the same time, if for whatever reason you can't make it down to the stadium, we've got you covered right here, News Radio 1440, newsradio1440.com. Chris Adamswall doing a great job doing a call of the game. He does a fantastic job, and I'm actually trying to learn from him as a broadcaster myself how to paint those mental pictures like he does, because he's a master of it.
And he's so good on the road, on the road when he has nobody with him. He has to do that whole thing himself. And speaking for somebody who a long time ago did this, I can tell you that is to be admired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we try to breed our broadcasters to go on to replace Vince Scully. So that's our goal with every guy we come in.
Well, you've succeeded at least once in that.
But yeah, we're really lucky. We always have great people who want to be a part of the Biscuits organization, and Chris is one of them. Chris actually was brought to us by Joe Davis. He worked with him at Fox Sports, so he's been doing a great job and really coming into his own over the past two seasons.
And I have to add this on a personal note. If you'll let me, Jim Tocco started it all. He is a very close friend and every bit as good as anybody we've ever had.
And Jim Tocco is actually going to be doing some work for us here coming up.
He's going to be doing that's
some,
very exciting.
He's going to be doing some graphic design for us with the new ownership group.
Well, see, we are psychic.
Good transition, Joe.
That's great because I love Jim Tocco. He actually helped me out. Now, I'll give this story very quickly. I used to be a very high-ranking officer in the National FFA organization. I was a state officer. When I was a state officer, I asked Jim Tocco to do me a favor. We had a theme. We have a biscuit every year that we give out all the awards for the members that have worked really hard throughout the year. Jim Tocco didn't have to do this. I got in contact with Jim Tocco, asked him to essentially announce our opening lineup because it was a baseball theme. And so we had the actual Biscuits announcer announcing our officers as they did their intro. Now, it was pre-recorded, of course.
Right.
But, I mean, that's one of the things I love about the Biscuits. They realize that they're a part of the community. They want to help local people out. They do everything they can to, and I mean, we couldn't pay Jim Tocco. He just did that out of the goodness of his heart. So, you know, it's great to see people in that organization so willing to work with and help the community. So I appreciate all the work that the Biscuits do.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you being here with us, Scott.
No problem. Thanks, Caleb. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Scott.
Right. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The general principles on which the fathers achieve independence were the general principles of Christianity. John Adams.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. By the way, it was great to catch up with Scott from the Montgomery Biscuits. Glad to see that they're doing all that they do out there. Speaking of local sports, join the Prattville Patriots Pro Developmental Team for their next home game this Saturday, May 13th, at Stanley Jensen Stadium in Prattville, as they take on the Metro Atlanta Horsemen. Game time is going to be at 6 p.m., so be sure to check that out. Now, getting back to the subject that we had beforehand, if you want some indication, and I actually posted this picture last night on Facebook and Twitter, if you want some indication of how big a deal the media believes the James Comey story is, and it is, I'm not saying that it's not, I was on CNN last night looking up the news, and they had two sections. They had the top section that just about everything was about James Comey, and then you scroll down a little bit. They actually had a part of their news feed titled Non-Comey News. They had a whole section just for any news that wasn't related to James Comey. They had to differentiate that. And so if you want any idea of how big a story the media thinks this is, CNN.com, it was just... that just struck me as funny. You can check that picture out on the Patriot Preacher's Facebook page or Twitter.
I am going to do it. I didn't see that. That is hilarious.
Check it out at Twitter at Patriot Preach. That just tickled me. Now, we've talked about really how both sides have switched on how they feel about James Comey, about trying to justify. Because it was funny, as soon as the news came out that he had been fired, immediately everybody rushed to a camera or a microphone on both sides, and they were expected to have a good reason for why they switched sides in less than 24 hours on how they felt on James Comey. And it was almost kind of comical watching them trying to calculate and figure out exactly how they're supposed to explain to the American people how their opinion is the exact opposite of what it was 24 hours ago. So you had this really strange sort of parade of people changing their minds. And here's one thing that I would want to submit to you. Andrew McCabe, he is now the acting director of the FBI until a replacement is named. And he could be the replacement. I don't know. I don't think he will be. But he just moved up in the pecking order. Now, Andrew McCabe, part of the reason that he moved up is because of everything that happened. It seems that he was a diehard Hillary Clinton supporter. And we covered this story several months ago when the news broke about James Comey and announcing, or with that letter, sending a letter to Congress alerting them that they had reopened the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails because the laptop, Huma Abedin. Now, Hillary Clinton can blame James Comey all she wants to for him coming out with that letter 11 days before the election, but the reason that it came out 11 days before the election is in part because of Andrew McCabe. Because Andrew McCabe, who was the number two guy at the time, who, by the way, his wife is an elected official and has received some suspicious donations to her campaign from Democrat operatives, and I'll just leave it at that. I don't have time to go into all the details right now. You can look at our backlogged episodes on thepatriotpreacher.com if you want to get the full story on that. But anyway, the reason that it took them a long time to get a warrant into Huma Abedin's emails that Anthony Weiner, that they confiscated from him on his laptop, the reason that it took him a while to get that warrant is because of Andrew McCabe, who is now the acting director of the FBI. So it was about 3 weeks. That letter would have come about 3 weeks earlier, 3 weeks earlier than the 11 days before the election, had the FBI and the agents working directly under McCabe done what they thought that he should have done, which is go ahead, get the warrant, get it out there. It appears that the reason Andrew McCabe had not issued that warrant is because he wanted to help Hillary Clinton win the election. He wanted to hold off on that before, until the election had happened. Now, as soon as James Comey found out about it, about the fact that they had been holding off on that warrant, even though they knew that there were emails from Hillary Clinton's server on that laptop, it was because of Andrew McCabe, because he had not issued, he was leading that investigation, he had not issued the order to issue that warrant to find out what was going on there and whether or not the emails in there were related to the Hillary Clinton case. Now, it turns out they weren't, but the point is, they had not received a warrant for that, and had they done it immediately when they found it, that announcement would have come 3 weeks earlier. So the question is, if you're Donald Trump, and I know Donald Trump and his advisors have looked into this and know this. I mean, there's no way they haven't. So if Donald Trump and his people know all that, why would they fire James Comey when they know that the next guy in line, who would be the acting director, if nothing else, for a little while, would be Andrew McCabe? Now, is Andrew McCabe going to cease and desist when it comes to the investigation into the Russian collusion with Donald Trump's campaign? Not on your life. Somebody like that is not going to let go of the investigation. They were saying that, and so this is my point in all this. All the Democrats are coming out and saying that the reason that Donald Trump did this is to quash the investigation into Russia. Well, if that's the case, firing James Comey was the stupidest thing Donald Trump could have done. Now, I don't know what the president's doing, I'll be honest. And anyone that tells you they know exactly what the president's doing, they're not being honest with you. So keep that in mind, that when they tell you, I know exactly what the president's doing, this is his motivation, he's trying to, they don't know. Now, hopefully we will find out in the next few days. Hopefully this news does come out. That's what I'm hoping for. I want to get to the truth. But if someone's telling you that they already know, that's speculation. That's their own opinion. I'm just being upfront with you. I don't know. I have some ideas, I have some theories, and I've shared those with you, but I'm not sure. And so when we're looking into this, I don't know, because politically it doesn't make any sense to fire James Comey right now. From a public relations perspective, it doesn't really make any sense to fire James Comey right now. So I'm really not sure. But I do hope that we can get a look into his motivations. All I'm saying is, if Donald Trump was specifically firing James Comey to get him out of the way and end the Russian investigation, then that was a really stupid move, because Andrew McCabe is going to, if nothing else, notch up that investigation because he has reason to do so. So that's not going to end the investigation. That's not going to end them looking into his campaign and whether or not they were colluding with Russia. If anything, that's going to escalate it. Now, I did want to bring this up because there are a few people in Washington that I don't trust blindly, but if they say it, I'm interested in what they have to say, because I know that they're just calling balls and strikes. They're just being honest. Yesterday, I was listening to an interview with Mike Lee, senator from Utah, and love him or hate him, he's a principled man that sticks to his convictions. That's actually the same thing I've said about Chief Justice Roy Moore before. Now, a lot of people hate Roy Moore, a lot of people love Roy Moore, but whether you love him or hate him, he's a man of conviction. He believes what he believes. And the same thing with Mike Lee. And Mike Lee is not the kind of person that kowtows to anybody, be it Donald Trump or anybody else. And so Mike Lee came out in an interview yesterday, and he made the most compelling case that I've heard of, that whether you like James Comey or not, he should be removed from office. And I'm going to give it to you right now, because again, I don't think Comey should have been removed from office. But this argument at least made me think about that and consider this. You see, James Comey is now a household name. And he's been a household name for months now. His firing is not the only reason that he's a household name. Just about everybody knows who Jim Comey is. And for an FBI director, that's not a good thing. Because as an FBI director, you don't want to be a household name. You don't want to be in the spotlight. The FBI director really should, in a lot of ways, be an afterthought. The only people that should know who the FBI director is are people in Washington and political analysts like me. Because typically what you want is somebody who, he's a law enforcement officer, all he is like the umpire at a baseball game or a referee at a fight. You're not supposed to notice him. He's just supposed to call balls and strikes, do it fairly, be impartial, and then move on. And in fact, the best umpire or the best referee in a, let's say, a boxing match, the best ref for a boxing match is one where you barely notice he's there. And that's exactly the same thing that the director of the FBI should be, and unfortunately, that was not James Comey. Now, sometimes the ref or the umpire, in the sake of fairness, must inject himself in there, even though he doesn't want to, because he has to set something right. He has to bring up a rule or explain himself or whatever. Through no fault of his own, sometimes circumstances arise where an umpire or referee has to jump in the middle of it. And that's what James Comey, in my opinion, had to do. He wasn't really given a choice. He was given a bad set of circumstances. Now, the way he reacted to those circumstances, it's fair to criticize him on that. But he can't help that Hillary Clinton hit an email server in her basement for the duration of her tenure as the Secretary of State. He can't help that Huma Abedin married a pervert who wound up being investigated by the FBI and happened to have emails from Hillary Clinton's server on her laptop. And he can't help that it showed up on his desk 11 days before the election. That is not under his control. Now, if you want to criticize how he reacted to those things, that's fine. But keep that in mind, that he didn't control that set of circumstances. And so essentially what Mike Lee was saying is, you don't want a guy that's that high profile in a law enforcement role. I understand that, and I'm sympathetic to that argument. I still think that it was wrong to oust him like that, but I get that aspect of it. Because with an umpire or referee, it's never good that they become part of the action, even if it wasn't their fault that they were part of the action. So none of these circumstances were James Comey's fault, but nobody could say that he wasn't involved in them. And for that alone, saying maybe we should go a different direction, reset the FBI, that argument I understand. So it's just something to think about. We'll continue to cover this. Hour two coming up.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
In the wake of the James Comey firing, the FBI was talking about something totally unrelated that throws a bombshell into the middle of everything. We'll talk about that story now on The Patriot Preacher. Welcome back, everybody. Hour 2 of The Patriot Preacher is on. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in, talk about what we're talking about. Which, by the way, I'm going to mention this in just a second, but do keep in mind that we still have those tickets for the Black Jacket Symphony performing the Beatles' classic Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album. If you do want to get in on that, if you want to get those tickets, you can get them before you can even buy them right here at The Patriot Preacher. If you call in, tell my producer that you want the tickets, and we'll try to get those to you as soon as possible. But while we're on the subject, you see, everybody's talking about the FBI right now, but nobody's talking about this aspect of it. Because the James Comey thing, of course, it's a huge story. I get that it's eaten up a lot of media time. It deserves a lot of media time because it's a big deal. But at the same time, the FBI just recently, this week, dropped a massive bombshell that virtually nobody in the media picked up. In fact, the only reason I found it is because it happened to be on one of the pages to the Daily Wire. And it's part of James Comey's testimony that he did earlier this week, obviously before he was fired. So this is completely unrelated to the firing, but I think it may be certainly the second most important thing the FBI has come out with. It may be the first. I don't know. But this is just the plain wording. This is an actual quote from James Comey in his hearing. "We have about 1,000 homegrown violent extremist investigations, and we probably have another 1,000 or so that are, I should define my terms, homegrown violent extremist. We mean somebody. We have no indication that they'll touch with any terrorist, that they're in touch with any terrorist." Senator Tillis said, "Any foreign touch, right?" Comey comes back, "Yes, we have another big group of people that we're looking at who we see some contact with foreign terrorists. So you take that 2,000 plus cases, about 300 of them are people who came to the United States as refugees." This is huge. This is something that we're just now learning about, and I don't know why we haven't heard about it beforehand. 300 of those cases are refugees. That means that roughly 15% of all the terrorist investigations in the FBI right now center around people who came to the United States as refugees. And no one's talking about it. So, by the way, props to the Daily Wire for being the only news organization that really brought this to my attention. There may be other people that reported on it and I just didn't see it, but the point is, why is the media not talking about this? Because it flies completely in the face of their narrative. Because the vast majority of the media is still pushing the narrative there have been no, and this part actually is true, there have been no terrorist attacks in the United States that have been carried out by refugees, certainly foreigners, but not people that came specifically as refugees. That the people that are, this part is not true, the people that are being brought here as refugees have been thoroughly vetted, they're safe, we know who they are, there's no reason for concern, no reason to be worried about this, and if you do think that there is reason to be concerned, or that we should even just pause, not necessarily cut off, but pause and take a step back and look at our refugee policy, then you're an evil, hateful, racist bigot. That's the line that has been pushed. That's the narrative that they are going forward with. Because any time anybody like myself suggests, hey, let's take a pause here for a second, see if we can improve our vetting process, improve our refugee process, maybe look into, if nothing else, pausing refugees from a certain part of the world because they've been known beds of terrorism just for a little while until we can sort this through and maybe see if we can help them overseas and then maybe bring them in later. Anytime that's brought up, and I know because it happens to me on social media all the time, you have people coming out in droves saying that you're just a racist, you're backwards thinking, you don't understand, you hate Muslim people, you hate Arab people, so on and so forth, which, by the way, I want to clear up some of that confusion now. Muslim is not a race. There are Christian Arabs, there are Jewish Arabs. Muslim is not a race, so even if you do think I quote-unquote hate Muslims, which I don't, that still wouldn't make me a racist. But anyway, it's just their vocabulary is not that high, and they have to come up with some kind of insult, I guess. But anyway, my point in all of this is, if 15% of all the investigations are people who are refugees, not only is that disproportionate to the number of refugees, but that's also incredibly disproportionate to the American population as a whole. If that is, think about that, because there's nowhere near 15% of the population that's even refugees, much less refugees that are being investigated for possible ties to terrorism. And so if you're looking at just the refugee population and just the general population, 15% is high. 15% is insanely high. And so when we're looking at this, the main point is that we should be taking away from this: letting people in from countries with no records is dangerous. Because that's the problem with the quote-unquote vetting process, and that's the problem that I've had with it from the very beginning. You can't vet somebody from a country that doesn't have infrastructure. I mean, yeah, the guy doesn't have a criminal record because they don't have criminal records in that country. That doesn't mean that we can say that he's safe. So in countries where they don't have sophisticated enough technology to keep records of those things, that it's impossible to look into these people, and especially in a system where, keep in mind, ISIS is essentially a country now, it even prints its own money. In a system where ISIS is running a government and can pass legal, authentic government documents like a passport, we can't just trust the vetting process. Not because there's something wrong with the way we're doing our vetting, per se. It's more the problem with there's nothing to vet. There's no records to look at, and that's the issue. And so this goes back to my main point that letting people into the country from countries that are war-torn, that are wroth with terrorist organizations, it's dangerous. And we have to consider that before we just take all kinds of people in that don't have records to check against. And by the way, this story makes Trump's travel ban look an awful lot. It makes it make a lot more sense if you look at it in this context. So if you're thinking about it from that perspective, it really does make a lot more sense to put a pause on this, because the travel ban, I think that it was a very measured response, and we're going to get into that here in a second. The Supreme Court's probably going to be hearing it before too long, and I'll be really interested to see which way the court goes on it. I think that, especially now that we have Neil Gorsuch on the court, that the court's going to wind up siding with Donald Trump on that, because there was no religious test given. It just specifically lays out certain countries. It's limited in that scope. It's not even permanent. It's just a pause for the time being. It's essentially saying, hang on, let's freeze this just for a little while, try to get our sea legs, get up under it, see how we can improve this and get it better and make sure these people are safe to mix with our population before we just start taking in droves the way the Obama administration did. I think that's a reasonable request. And so that, all of a sudden, when you look at it from this light, makes a lot more sense than it did beforehand. Just something to consider. We'll talk a little bit more about this when we come back. I want to hear your opinions on it. 860-1440 is the way to do that.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 3:20, for our citizenship is in heaven, from which also we eagerly wait for a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in. And if you do want to call in, keep in mind that the Black Jacket Symphony returns to the Montgomery Performing Arts Center on September the 16th to present the Beatles' classic album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Tickets are on sale this Friday, 10 a.m. through all Ticketmaster outlets. News Radio 1440 has a chance to win the seats before you can even buy them. So tune in every day right here to the Patriot Preacher for your chance to win those tickets. We've got several tickets left. If you want them, call in. You can get them before you can even buy them right here at News Radio 1440 with the Patriot Preacher. So call in, let Joe know that you want the tickets, and we'll try to get those to you. We'll try to set you up with that. You could win today. Now, getting back to the subject we were talking about, because keep in mind, the FBI just released that approximately 15%, 300 cases out of the cases that they're looking at right now involve people who came to the United States as refugees, which is insanely high when you're looking at it compared to the actual overall population. There's a lot of people that are refugees that are being investigated right now on suspicion of terrorism. So there's a lot of reason for concern here with people coming in. And really the bottom line in all this is that what we're doing now is we're vetting people after we bring them here, not before. We're looking at people, investigating people, looking into their background, looking into their stories after they're already here, not beforehand. And that's
about
a problem.
I'm sorry. What about domestic terrorism?
Well, that's everybody else.
Right. I mean, that seems to be the bigger one of the, at least one of the larger problems.
Well, it's a huge problem, and James Comey talks about that, but here's the thing. Not 15% of the American population are refugees, which means there is a disproportionately high level of people who are involved in terrorism, or at least are under suspicion and being investigated for terrorism, that are not homegrown. Now, I'm not saying that that's not an issue, but that's a separate problem. What we're dealing with specifically right here are the 300 cases that the FBI is currently investigating of refugees that have come here that could, you know, potentially have ties to terrorism. And we're looking at whether or not that they have those connections, whether they're in contact with them, if they're being radicalized here where they are. So this is the problem that we're running into. We're vetting them after they're here, not beforehand. And why are we doing this? Well, you could draw a lot of that back. Why are we bringing these people in the first place? That goes back to a lot of the decisions that were made under President Barack Obama. So keep in mind, Barack Obama said that we could always absorb another terrorist attack. That's something that he said. That's coming from his stenographer. And when, you know, when he, which is bone chilling to me. And he said that he would constantly remind his staff that refugees kill less people, talking about in Europe, than handguns or car accidents. That's terrifying to me, that the commander in chief, the president, the leader of our country was saying, well, we can just absorb another terrorist attack, that we can take another one. First of all, there is no reason for us to open ourselves up to a terrorist attack to help people that are not even American citizens. I mean, on a personal level, that's admirable, that's good that you want to help people, but from a government standpoint, the president's main job is to protect Americans, not worry about refugees. And what the president was doing was shipping in more Muslims, more refugees as a whole, but primarily Muslims, because we remember we looked at this about a year ago, and I did a segment on it back when I was on the Saturday show, that we saw that out of all the refugees that were being brought over, Christians were actually being actively discriminated against, that we were not bringing in hardly any Christians compared to the amount of Muslims that we were bringing in. And I believe that shows a direct correlation with the fact that refugees that come in, not even refugees, talking about immigrants as a whole here, not talking about refugees specifically, and particularly ones that are of a different religion, tend to overwhelmingly vote Democrat. The Democrats were actively importing votes from other countries. And that's part of the reason. I don't think it's the only reason, but I think it's a big part of the reason that they were importing people from other countries. And they were essentially just shipping in Democrat voters. And they think that that's more important than your safety. The safety of you, safety of your family. They can, you know, Barack Obama's stance is essentially, we can always just absorb another terrorist attack. That's fine. But we have to bring in the people. We have to bring in the people from other countries. And I want you to consider this. I think in their mind, because you have to ask the question why, you have to look at their motivation. This is based on my observation, my study of it. This is what I believe. they saw this opportunity. They thought it was the perfect opportunity to make America less Christian, less white, less wealthy. Because when you're looking at people on the left, that's their most common criticism of America. We're too white, we're too Christian, we're too wealthy. They don't like the fact that we're a Christian nation. They don't like the fact that our founders were Christians and that our government was founded on that principle. They don't like the fact that we're wealthy. We've had it too good for too long. We need to share the wealth. Barack Obama is saying it's always best when we spread the wealth around. That was actually before he was even elected, back when he was talking to Joe the Plumber. And they always seem to have a problem with us being quote-unquote too white. Even though we're the most diverse country in the world by a lot, they always complain that we're too white. They have a problem with quote-unquote white Anglo-Saxon people. Now, you know, I have made it a point to go out of my way to criticize nationalist, white supremacist. I don't think that America should have a racial identity. I think I've made myself incredibly clear on that. But at the same time, I also don't want white people actively discriminated against either. I just want everybody to be equal, everything to be fair. I don't want there to be a preferred race. I don't want there to be a race that is excluded either. So that being said, this was, in their mind, the perfect opportunity to make America less Christian, less white, and less wealthy. Well, if you import a bunch of poor Arabic Muslims, that is pretty much going to be accomplished. You're going to have less white people, less Christians, and less wealthy people. And so they saw this as a golden opportunity to start shifting, to start manipulating the population to bend to their will. Because America was founded on a very simple principle. And this is the reason that our founders, in Ben Franklin's word, left us a republic if we can maintain it. This is why they set up our system of government this way. Because we were founded on the premise that when the people see that the government is no longer working in their interest, that it is no longer in their best interest to keep the government that they have, we have elections, and through our process, we replace the government with new government. Now what has happened with them bringing in the refugees is they're seeing the American population, the government is, the people that we have elected, and they're saying, we no longer like what the population's doing. We don't like the way that they're making decisions. So now, instead of the people replacing the government, which is the idea that our founders had, we now have the government replacing the people. It's literally working backwards. We are now in the opposite of what our founders saw. We have people actively working to import different people. And this goes just beyond the refugee. It also goes to immigration in general, with them turning the other way and essentially inviting people from other countries to come in, wanting to have an open border system. What we have is the government now replacing the people, saying, we know best, we don't like the way the American population is reacting to us, and so now, instead of them replacing us, before they can replace us, we're going to replace them so they'll vote the way that we want them to. That's what's been happening over the past few years, and we're going to offer people from other countries goodies and preferred status and give them free stuff in order to invite them over. It's obscene on so many levels that now we have the government trying to manipulate our population and trying to change who we are because it benefits them, because it keeps them in power. It's something I can't fathom, and I think this attitude, even though I think the reaction was misguided, I think this is in a lot of ways the reason that Donald Trump was elected. Now, granted, you guys know this about me. I've said it 1,000 times on the air. I didn't support Donald Trump. I thought his rhetoric was too harsh. I don't like his approach. I don't like the way that he's handled the immigration so far. Didn't have a problem with the travel ban, per se. But dang it, that was kind of his main issue, and there were a lot of people that it resonated with. So, something to consider. We're going to shift gears here in a second. 860-1440 if you want to call in. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
As to Jesus of Nazareth, my opinion of whom you particularly desire, I think the system of morals in his religion, as he left them to us, the best the world ever saw or is likely to see. Benjamin Franklin.
Welcome back, everybody. 860-1440 are the numbers. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Now, I have a question to ask you. What makes your mom the greatest? And what would make your mom feel like the greatest mom in the world? Maybe a trip to the spa, cleaning services for a year, an epic shopping spree, 1,000 bouquets of roses? Well, in celebration of Mother's Day, we are giving you the chance to win $4,000 for mom by telling us what makes her great and what you would do for her if you won. You can enter today at newsradio1440.com, and I suggest that everyone do this, and here's why. Regardless of who you are, now, obviously you want to win, and I understand that. That's the reason you're entering the contest. Good luck to each and every one of you that do. Go to newsradio1440.com and do that. But even if you don't win the $4,000 grand prize, you can still earn brownie points with mom, because you have to sit down there, think about it, write it out. So maybe what you do is you make her a nice card with whatever it is that you wrote about it in there, or you just say, hey, Mom, here's your Mother's Day present. Sorry, I didn't win the contest. And she'll, what contest? Well, there's this contest with the radio, and they were trying to find the number one greatest mom, and I entered you. They wound up picking someone else, but this is what I wrote. See, I mean, that's perfect. So you're going to win either way. Even if you don't win the prize, you're still winning with mom, and that's truly important on Mother's Day.
That is a nice prize, though.
Oh, certainly.
Obviously. Do I have any other comments?
Right. Now, here's what I don't recommend. Do not write this down and then give that to mom for Mother's Day. You still want to get her a present, so don't do that. But, you know, do that in addendum to what you're giving. Now, if you win the grand prize, I think $4,000, that's good. But if you don't win the contest, let her know about this. Earns brownie points with you with mom, which is always great. Maybe in when you're talking about your mom earning brownie points, maybe literal, which would be great for me because brownies are my favorite dessert. So maybe your mom even bakes you some brownies in response to that. So just keep that in mind that when you're entering this contest that you're going to win either way. I also wanted to mention one of our great sponsors, Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. I love these guys. They've been in business here 50 years in the River region, and it's because of one reason. They do a good job. I mean, as simple as that. You could talk about the different things. You could talk about the expertise of their mechanics, which is phenomenal. You can talk about how quickly they get you in and out, which is also great. You could talk about their great prices. It's all of those things. All of it falls under the umbrella is they do it right. They do a good job. It's as simple as that. And that's why I recommend you go down and see them today at the Troy Highway in Montgomery right here. They've been in business for 50 years in the River region, like I said, and you will not walk away dissatisfied. They do everything they can to keep you in the driver's seat. They can do everything from just replacing your tires, rotating them, getting an alignment, which, by the way, helps you with your miles per gallon, to major engine repair. So anything you need done, go see my friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Now, I wanted to bring this up because I love giving credit where credit is due. And unfortunately, because of the way that the news and the media have reacted to the James Comey thing and with the FBI revelation about the refugees that we just talked about, I've done a fairly negative show. And so I want to bring out this really, I want to give kudos to this particular person, Jake Tapper. Jake Tapper, who does the Lead with Jake Tapper on CNN. I've respected him for a long time. I think he's one of the very few great journalists left in news right now. He's one of the few that I respect. There's a couple others. I really like Anderson Cooper, also with CNN. You know, I have a lot of respect for Bill O'Reilly still. I still have no idea whether those allegations are true, and until I do know that they're true, regardless of what his status is with Fox News, I still respect him. I still think that he's, you know, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt until he gives me a reason to prove otherwise.
But even if he's guilty of all that, that doesn't take away from the fact that he's good at what he does.
That's true, and that's so, a good point.
I'm not as big a fan of his as you are, but I just thought I'd bring that out to be fair. It's like, you know, O.J. Simpson is, you know, a scumbag, but he's still...
Right, still a good football player.
Yeah.
And yeah, I see what you're saying on that. Bill Cosby, regardless of what he may or may not have done, he's still a great comedian.
Oh, that's he's really is a dirty homie.
Well, mind. Yeah, maybe. But what I'm saying is I'm just going along with your point. But yeah, good thing to bring out, Joe. But what I'm saying in all of this is when it comes to Jake Tapper, now O'Reilly's a political commentator. He's not a journalist. I respect them for similar reasons. But at the same time, Tapper is a true journalist. He does the absolute dead level best that he can to remain impartial. He calls people out, regardless of what side they're on, which is something I respect greatly of him. When Trump said something stupid, he calls Trump out on it. Back in the election, when Hillary Clinton said or did something stupid, he called her out on it. And he did it with the same level of ferocity. And that's one of the reasons I respect Jake Tapper. We have an example of him doing essentially just that and really showing this isn't really so much a journalist thing. It's just something that he did that I really have respect for him. So the other day, Jake Tapper takes to Twitter on his Twitter account to offer condolences to the family of Bob Owens. Now, Bob Owens, for those of you who may not be aware of who that is, he was the editor of Bearing Arms. And Bearing Arms is a popular gun advocacy site. It's big on the Second Amendment. For those of you like me who are gun enthusiasts who love the Second Amendment and you know, are interested in matters and news concerning that, Bearing Arms is a great website to go to. Now, it appears based on the circumstances, because he had the weapon in the room, the door was closed, it looks like he took his own life. And based on that, and also with the Facebook post that he posted just not too long before they found his body, it looks like it was a suicide. We don't know that for sure, but that's what it appears to be. You know, it's a real shame. That's horrible for any family to go through. I thank God that I've never had to go through that with somebody that has been in my family. I've known families that did, but I never have personally, and so I'm very grateful for that. But at the same time, you know, you can't help but feel sorry for that family and everything that they're going through. And Jake Tapper goes on Twitter to offer condolences to that family, which is a real stand-up thing to do, and I appreciate him saying that. But here's the thing. He took it even a step farther, because inevitably what happened is, and I'm sure, in fact, I've been the victim of this, there are people on the other side that would have done the same thing if a big figure in the liberal political movement had done this. There were a lot of liberals that responded to Tapper's tweet in several horrible ways. I'm going to read just a few of them here. I had to be very selective because there was a lot of swearing in a lot of them.
And don't put all the liberals under one blanket now.
Well, I just prefaced my statement by saying, yeah, I just prefaced by saying if the situation were reversed, there would be people on the right that did this too. So I'm not pinning this just on liberals. But since it is someone who was a big second rights advocate, and this was a we had some liberals come out and say, for example, one said, "Jake, can you confirm reports that Bob was wearing a diaper when he owned himself?" Another one was, "Glad Bob Owens died at the hands of a madman with a gun." One other person tweeted, "Love to respect those racist expletive," which, by the way, there were a lot of tweets that I couldn't read because of the expletives. But this one in particular, "Love to respect racist expletive when they finally do the right thing and turn off the lights." So, I mean, just horrible things to say, which the man's already dead. There's no reason to bring this up or to talk about this. And whether you love the man or hated him, you know, you can't imagine what his family's going through. And you just feel bad for them. So Tapper, being the upstanding guy that he is, responded by saying he didn't agree with the man all the time. But he also responded with this, which I thought was very telling of who Jake Tapper is. He said, "I have no idea what you're talking about. All I'm seeing is a lot of liberals dancing on the grave of a conservative, and it's sickening." So, props to Jake Tapper for calling it like he sees it and having a little humanity, which he just came out with this. Regardless of how you feel about Bob Owens, I didn't really have strong opinions of him one way or the other. I advocated for a lot of the same things that he did, so obviously he and I were allies on a lot of Second Amendment issues. But at the same time, I mean, that's one thing that I really appreciated seeing. You might remember, what's his name? Alvin Holmes.
The state legislator. Former Alvin Holmes here?
Sorry. I'm blanking on his name.
What did he do?
Combs. Hannity and Combs?
Hannity and Combs.
That's what it was.
Sure.
I was thinking Alvin Holmes for some reason. I knew it wasn't Alvin Holmes because he's here
Combs,
in Alabama.
Well,
Combs.
Oh, yeah, and Hannity eulogized him and said what a wonderful, compassionate one. Yeah, I thought,
right, and a lot of political pundits on the right. Now, I'm sure that on Twitter there were probably some, you know, crazy right-wing nuts that were saying similar things.
I don't know that everybody who was writing those horrible was it Facebook or Twitter or both? What? But you don't know for sure they were liberal, just like you don't know for sure somebody's a right-wing conservative.
Well, from a couple of the tweets, you actually can. For example, the first one that I read, it's a tweet from a contributor of Vice News who is known to be very liberal.
Okay.
And so in some cases, actually, I can confirm that.
That's just, I know where your heart is.
Right.
And I guess we're probably pretty close there when it comes to respecting someone's life. And being a human being, having a family. Yeah, you said it all.
Absolutely. And the thing is, Combs and I disagreed on practically everything, but you still hate it for his family and you hate it for him. Because I think that what we've done is, and it's a real problem in this country, and I'm going to bring this up here in a second in the Star Spangled Sermon, so I don't want to get too deep into it because we have to save something for that. But I think we've done such a good job of distancing ourselves from our political affiliation, and that we've tried this disassociation thing, that we've made, and I've talked about this many times, we've sectioned ourselves off into camps, and you have to hate whoever's in the opposite camp. When we do that, and when we distance ourselves from it, I think we forget that they're human too. Now, this episode, I've been pretty harsh on a lot of people, and I brought that up. It's been a pretty negative episode, but I think that it was necessary because of what's going on in the news right now. But at the same time, and I would encourage my audience to do the same thing, I don't hate any of these people. I don't want bad things to happen to any of them. Even if I vehemently disagree with them and think that they're bad for the country, I still don't hate them. These people actively hated Bob Owens because of the things that he believed, and I don't think that that's right. And so whenever something like this happens, it's always best to remember that they're a person too. They're still a child of God. Even if they don't like God, they're still a child of God. And it's important to remember that we're supposed to behave in a certain way, whether or not they would show us the same courtesy. Just something to think about. Star Spangled Sermon coming up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 13:34-35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Now, I looked it up, and I don't know why I was blanking on this. I kept getting confused with Alvin Holmes, which is, of course, one of the representatives right here in the House of Alabama. It's Alan Combs that I was thinking about, of course, longtime partner with Sean Hannity. They wound up going separate ways, but he was still a Fox News contributor. And then when he passed, he and a lot of conservatives, Sean and a lot of conservatives, came out offering condolences, which I really appreciated to see.
And you came a lot closer to the first name than I did.
Right.
At least you said Alvin. And I couldn't I could think of Combs, but I couldn't think of his first name. And then, and of course, we looked it up. Alvin Holmes is still alive and well.
Alvin Holmes is still, I mean, he's still a representative. Alan Combs is the one who passed.
And Alvin is just a little, we were talking about this, he's not quite, at least right now, not quite as vocal about, not quite as visible, I guess.
He's not been in the news as much as you would expect him to be based on the past. But the point is, I apologize for that. I did look it up. I don't know why I was blanking on that. I guess it's been a long day for me, too. I didn't get into bed till about 2 o'clock, so maybe it's not firing on all cylinders for me today, but I do have enough to get us through the Star Spangled Sermon, which I think I've got a good lesson here prepared, kind of in response to one of the things that Jake Tapper, it made me think of this with everything that was happening with Jake Tapper coming forward and there being people that were essentially just going after Bob Owens, even though just because they disagreed with him, making fun of him, even though he's passed now. And it was just terribly inappropriate. It made me think of a passage which comes from Proverbs 6. And I'm going to read verses 16 and 19. I'm actually going to skip 17 and 18 because what happens here is the proverb writer Solomon is making a list. And so a lot of the things in the list are not relevant to what we're talking about, so I'm just going to read the intro to the list and then skip ahead. So Proverbs 6:16, there are 6 things which the Lord hates, yes, 7 which are an abomination to him. And then it skips ahead to verse 19. A false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among brothers. So, we always hear about God's love, and we should. I mean, he is the embodiment of love. We know that from the passage. We know that from Scripture. that he is, it says that God is love, that he is the manifestation of love. And so we hear a lot about God's love, and we should. But there are things that even God hates. The proverb writer makes that very clear. Not people, not souls, but he does hate sin. He hates things that are evil. And he lists here seven things, and the two things that we just talked about are someone who utters lies and someone who spreads strife amongst his brothers. Now, I want to ask this question. Why, out of all the evil things that he could have listed, why spreading strife amongst the brothers? The world has an awful lot of evil. There's a lot of things that could have been listed in these seven things. Why does God choose to hate someone who spreads strife amongst his brothers as one of those things? And on top of that, it's actually the last thing in the list. Why is that? I genuinely believe that part of the reason that it's set up this way is that nothing, and granted, I'm not saying this from personal experience, I'm going off of other people who do have children, because of course I don't. But I've been told by many a parent that there is nothing that hurts a parent more than to see their children fighting. And though I've never experienced that myself, I can kind of empathize with that, and I understand why that would be very hurtful to a parent. Since God is our Father, and because he cares about us the way that he does, I'm sure it tears him up when he sees us fighting amongst ourselves. And I can only imagine how much it bothers him that people that he went through the trouble of creating with his own hands, that he loves, that he cares about, that he has known, according to passages, for example, in Romans, that says that he's known us since the beginning of time, that he has known us all this time, that he knows us better than we know ourselves, that he loves us in a way that we can't even fathom, to see us fighting amongst each other. And so when looking at some of the people's responses to not just this one particular episode, but in the recent months in this country, watching the way that we have been enthusiastically tearing each other apart, taking really no concern for the other person, just wanting to get our message across, wanting to get a jab in, and then walk away, I don't think that this is behavior that our Father would be very appreciative of. In fact, the proverb writer says this is something that even a God of love hates. This is something that he can't stand to watch. It's okay to disagree with somebody. I disagree with people a lot. In fact, in a way, it's almost my job to disagree with people. So there's nothing wrong with an honest intellectual disagreement. I'm not saying that there's any problem with that. It's okay to have a heated and enthusiastic debate on ideas. But you should never make it personal. You should never make it about the person that you're arguing with. And most importantly, in this situation, you really shouldn't relish in someone, even someone that you don't necessarily like all that much. You should never relish in something bad happening to them. As much as I dislike some of the people on the left and think that they're bad for the country, Barack Obama, Elizabeth Warren, I don't want anything bad to happen to those people. I think they're misguided. I think that they have some ideas that are not, you know, fully thought out, or even if they are thought out and they are malicious, that's still no excuse to want bad things to happen to them. That's still no excuse to celebrate some evil taking place that hurts them. I know that it's human nature to think, yeah, they got theirs, and celebrate when someone who you don't personally like or an enemy gets something that you believe is coming to them, but that's not the way that God advocates brothers treating each other. And we have to keep in mind that we're all children of God. One more show left in the week. Stay the course, friends.
The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.